A federal judge has granted Boston gangster James Whitey Bulger a 2-week postponement of his trial for 19 murders set to begin this fall. This is to allow more time for his lawyer to review the case.
Bulger fled South Boston in 1995. He was arrested last June after 16 years on the run. Before he went on the lam, he had worked as a secret top FBI informant in the 1970s.
But now newly obtained government documents reveal that Bulger began snitching on criminals back in the 1950s.
WBUR's David Boeri has prepared a 2-part report on the surprising discoveries about Bulger in the 1950s. And David, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome, Anthony.
So, David, back in the 1950s, Bulger was in his 20s, a young man. What was he up to back then?
He got out of the Air Force in 1953, came back to Boston, and started tailgating, which is small-time crime. It's jumping onto the back of a truck and helping yourself to the contents. The next big step, and this is where he goes from zero to 60, he goes into bank robbery. Mm. He jumps into it in 1955. We know that he's robbed 3 banks. He'll later testify to that or admit to doing that. He's a bank robber, and he's traveling the country with a girl at his side robbing banks.
And we're going to get to that in just a moment, but I want to talk to you about these documents that you've been looking at, these FBI and prison documents. And, you know, they bring to mind this notion, and what a fallacy this notion is, that there is some honor among thieves. Because far from observing some sort of criminal code of honor, you learn, that he started snitching from pretty early on in his career.
He was almost a congenital snitch. The first time they bring him in on the bank robbery charges, he admits to 3 bank robberies. One of them was in Pawtucket, another Melrose, and one in Hammond, Indiana. But he is clearly showing the signs of the later Bulger, because he's going to give up the names of his accomplices on 2 of those bank jobs that haven't been solved yet, but he doesn't want anything on paper. If it's on paper, it identifies him as a rat. Now, how does he get around that? This is where he shows his Machiavellian best as it's developing early on. He gives up his girlfriend.
Hmm.
Who's been on the road with him, has been acting as a lookout for some of the bank robberies. She knows who's involved. He persuades her to cooperate, so she gives the FBI agents the names, and it's written down.
So his snitching begins early in his life, but you saw some other parallels in his later escapades, and this brings us to the whole relationship with Jackie McAuliffe, right?
Well, this is the story. So we see the pattern of snitching. We also see the pattern of protecting his reputation. And then there's the fact that he's out on the road with a girl from Southie, who is blonde, who loves dogs. Sound familiar?
You're describing Catherine Gregg, right?
Yeah, she's the doppelganger. Jackie McAuliffe Martin, who was 2 years older than him, took off on the road with him in 1955. They were Mr. and Mrs. Bulger out on the road. She was the lookout, and she saw a lot of action on that road. They go to New York. They go to Florida. They go to New Orleans. They go to the Gulf Coast. They go to Chicago. Sound familiar? And then they go to California. This is stunning. But, you know, what we know is that people are creatures of habit. And good detectives know they're creatures of habit, and they follow that. What is stunning here is that when she was in her 80s, a cop, not an FBI agent, shows up at her doorstep, and he asks her, has anybody been here before? Has the FBI ever been here before? And she says to him, no, you're the first. Expecting someone.
See, that's amazing, because clearly she could have provided at least some information about his habits. For instance, he liked California, right?
Absolutely. Loved California. What she could have told him. She could have played Where's Whitey with the FBI. They never went to her doorstep.
That's amazing. So, David, more coming tomorrow on Morning Edition. Give us a preview of what's in part 2 of your series, Whitey the Kid.
So, we've talked about patterns that were set in the 50s. He goes to prison, and now we see the next pattern. The fact that he has these blue-chip connections, the blue-chip connections come to him through his younger brother, William, who has these connections. It is their
The former Senate president, of course.
That's right. William Bulger, who had not yet gone into the state house as a representative, which he did in 1960. They have some connections. And talk about luck of the Irish. Their local congressman happens to come from Southie, happens to come from their own neighborhood, and happens to be the Speaker of the House. At the time, Whitey applies for early parole in 1964, and he gets it and walks out in March of 1965.
Amazing.
A free man with $10 from the U.S. government.
David Boeri, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And listeners, you can hear David's story about Whitey's attempts to get help from high places tomorrow morning on Morning Edition. And you can see images of Whitey Bulger through the years in a slideshow at RadioBoston.org.
And up next, from losing weight to breaking old habits, you've probably found an app to help you out. We'll be talking about behavior modification via smartphone. That's up next. I'm Adam Ragusa.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.